This will be kind of a model. This particular session about church growth will be more of a workshop style, and hopefully it'll at least spark our thinking and our mindset, and cause us to leave here giving maybe a better evaluation of ourselves and where we need to fill in any gaps in our ministry. I'm so thankful for the opportunity to have been here, to hear the lessons, to be encouraged by the fellowship, to benefit from the study of God's Word, and to see with great hope and expectation the good that's taking place in the kingdom. Now, sometimes it's easy to see the negative and to concentrate on the negative, and then at those times we lose sight of really the great good that's being done across the brotherhood. And I'm so thankful this particular lectureship is an example of the great good that's being done. I'm thankful for Wayne and for the eldership here and the leadership here, and the great investment that they made into our lives to be able to provide this for us. If you would be open your Bibles in Matthew the 13th chapter, in just a moment we'll begin in Matthew the 13th chapter. Little boy was excited because his dog that he loved dearly was going to have pups, and he always thought it would be a really neat thing to have two dogs. You see, he didn't understand the whole concept of a dog having a litter of puppies. He didn't understand the concept of taking care of his animal. And this is years ago, and so it's a little country town, and when it came about time for the dog to have her puppies, he ran down to the local vet and he said, "Doc, you got to come." And he called him just as he was coming out the door there for the end of the day. He says, "You've got to come to my barn." He said, "It's time, it's time. And I don't know anything about how a dog has puppies." And so the vet, he walked down there with him, and they went to the barn there, and the vet got down on his knees, and he said, "Son," he said, "if everything goes smoothly, this just be a beautiful and wonderful experience." And so he lit a lantern, and he said, "Now, you just hold the lantern here, and we'll just watch." And so in a little bit, the first little puppy was born. He's smiling, he's grinning from ear to ear. That's what he'd always wanted, was two dogs. And then the second puppy was born. And then the third puppy was born. And as the fourth puppy's being born, the little boy's getting real anxious. He's standing up and he's shifting from side to side because he doesn't know how he's going to take care of five dogs now. And then the sixth puppy is born. And the seventh puppy was born. And the little boy reached up that lantern and he blew it out. And the vet turns around in the dark and he says, "Son, what in the world are you doing?" He says, "Doc, I think the light's attracting them." Now, when you think of Jesus Christ being a light into the world, and he says, "If I be lifted up, I'll draw all men unto me." What a beautiful thought to think, as we have just been challenged in the previous hour, to think that we have the potential to share the gospel and to change someone's eternity. Today, as we talk about this idea of growth is still possible, I want you to realize that we're not talking about growth so that we can post it on a board in front of a congregation. We're not talking about growth so that when we're talking to somebody, they can say, "Hey, how many did you baptize last year? Hey, how many are you running attendance right now?" We're talking about growth so that we can change the population of heaven. Is it possible? Is that God's design? In Matthew the 13th chapter, there's a lot of short stories. They're short parables where Jesus was trying to help us and them understand what the kingdom of heaven was going to be like. Let's just read just two of these as we begin this lesson. In Matthew the 13th chapter and 31, here's a picture that he verbally strokes out for us to give us a canvas here to learn from. He says another parable he put forth them saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and he sowed in the field, and which indeed is the least of all the seeds. And when it is grown, it's greater than the herbs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and nest in its branches." What's the kingdom of heaven like? It's like a mustard seed. Mustard seed is so small, you can put several mustard seeds just on your thumbnail. But yet, whenever it grows in one of the largest herbs so that literally birds can come by and light him, if it's so huge, build a nest upon his branches. That's quite a difference. From a tiny, tiny seed to a large bush. Now, did we lose track here? We're not studying about a mustard seed. We're studying about the kingdom of heaven. What's the kingdom of heaven? It's like the mustard seed. It's going to start out small. But God's plan, God's design, is that it is always to be increasing. God's plan is for us to always be aware that there are souls around us that need to be reached with the gospel of Jesus Christ. How are we going to do that? The next parable is going to tell us how to do that, but please, let's see one quick thing before we leave here. You know, there's some congregations, they don't want to grow. So we ask this question, is it a sin if we're not growing? If a congregation is doing everything they can do to reach the souls around them for Jesus Christ, I would guess and summarize that it's not a sin to not be growing. But if a congregation is not doing all it can do to reach out to the lost around them, then we would have to summarize that it would be a sin, because the Great Commission is for us to take the gospel. And that begins right outside the doorsteps of our homes and of our church buildings. And so this idea of, well, you know, if we grow, we're going to lose our personality. And you know, this is just kind of a little family church here. And we go back generations here. And it's our great-great-grandfather that gave the land here. Well, we have to stop and ask ourselves, are we part of a denomination? Are we part of the Lord's church? Nobody on earth owns the Lord's church. And it doesn't matter what it changes our personality. And it doesn't matter how it changes our facility. And it doesn't matter if we have to start doing things differently because we become larger, because it's not our church. It's the Lord's church. And in the Lord's church, there's always room for the next soul that's looking for the Lord. How are we going to reach those souls? Well, he gives us probably one of the shortest parables in the Bible. Look at verse 33. Another parable he spoke to them. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 measures of meal till it was all leaven. Now, I am blessed to be able to tell you that I know just a little bit about bread. I grew up out in the country. We had 3 home-cooked meals every day. We had homemade bread at every meal. My mother made 2 recipes of sourdough bread every week. So we had at least 12 loaves of sourdough bread every week. Sourdough bread, if you're not accustomed to it, it begins with a lump of dough, and you take starter that's growing in your refrigerator that is also fed, and this starter is a yeast. And as long as it stays in the refrigerator and the dough stays in the bowl, nothing changes, even though they're in the same room. But whenever the starter, that is the yeast, is taken and it is mixed in with the dough, you have this huge bowl that you come back 2.5, 3.5 hours later, and it is rising above the top of the bowl. Many times I've seen my mother take a clean dish towel and place it on top of that lump of dough to keep it from spilling over into the cabinet. How did that happen? The yeast has to come in contact with the dough. He says the kingdom of heaven, it's going to be like that yeast that has to make contact with the world. We're not to be the world, but we have to get out into the world. And we have to make contact with the world. Listen, if my idea of a perfect world on this earth for faithful Christians is if we could just buy a subdivision and if we could put every faithful Christian in that subdivision, and while we're at it, let's go ahead and put some places of business in that subdivision so that all of us as faithful Christians would only work with faithful Christians, and then let's throw some schools in there so that the only kids our school would be a part of that school would be kids that are children of faithful Christians, and then that'd be a utopia on earth. What a wonderful blessing. Well, now we're back to, are you wanting to start your own church or you want to be a part of the Lord's church? Because the Lord's church relishes, thrives, loves the opportunity to have contact with people who are worldly. Not because we want to become worldly, Not because we want them to be our best friends while they are worldly, but we realize that's the only way that worldly souls are going to be won, is because they make contact with individuals that are faithful Christians. That's not my plan. That's not your plan. That's the Lord's plan. The Lord's plan is that the church is to grow, and people that are faithful members of that church are going to have to make contact with others that aren't. Now, I suppose this is not new to our generation, but if we want to just kind of pull back some of the layers of the onion and look and say, well, what are we facing today? Here are some statistics that shows us the challenge of what we're facing today when we're wanting to win individuals to the Lord. There's a research that's done by Lifeway Research, and it's the book is entitled Lost and Found, and they did quite a bit extensive studies on how the world views religion, the church, especially under the broad umbrella of the Christian church, okay? So this is not a survey by the churches of Christ or about the churches of Christ. By introduction, I just want to give you an idea of what we're dealing with when we look down our streets that we live on and we see house after house after house of individuals who are not religious at all and we're saying, how can we reach them? I believe I can have a good relationship with God without being involved in a church. 90% strongly or agree. They agree or strongly agree with that. 90%. You see, the idea of spirituality in the last two decades has changed. It used to be the idea that for individuals to be spiritual, they had to be connected with religion as well. But that has gone and passed in the world's understanding. Their understanding is you can have a relationship with God, you can be right with God, and you can leave the church or religion far behind. And you're probably the better for doing that. Now, why are we beginning with this? We're beginning with this to show the instance that we have to show the world not only Jesus Christ, but we have to show the world that Christ's body, the church, Colossians 1:18, is relevant. And so statistics are proving that 9 out of 10 are saying the church is not relevant. I want a relationship with God, but I don't want a relationship with a church. Why would they believe that? I think Christianity today is more about organized religion than about loving God and loving people. 80%. 8 out of 10 in the world agree with that. In other words, the first and second greatest commandment, the world doesn't see it. They think that churches believe that everything is about organized religion. And here's someone out in the world is saying, I'd just like to see a group that loves God and loves each other and loves mankind. And so that's the search and that's the journey that we're on. I'll give you one more here. People who attend a Christian church are generally more spiritual than those who do not attend a church. This surprised me more than any of the statistics. About 33% said they believe that. 3 out of 10 of your neighbors who are unchurched, 3 out of 10 believe that because you go to church, you're more spiritual than their neighbors that don't. Flip that over. 7 out of 10 of your neighbors believe that your neighbors around you that do not go to church are more spiritual than you are. More spiritual than you are. And we have to stop and ask ourselves why. How is it that a society that we live in can honestly, in their misunderstandings, believe that people who are unchurched are more spiritual than people who are? And then we have to stop and ask ourselves, what are we showing the world? Does the world see the first greatest commandment in our lives? Does the world see the second greatest commandment in our lives? You know, sometime when We say service. What we really mean is serve us and leave the world behind. On the handout that's before you, the very first model that is in that handout was one that we set out and worked on. And it's nothing earth-shattering. It's nothing that hasn't been thought of before. And that wasn't the purpose for us creating this model. The only reason we created this model was to evaluate ourselves. We were trying to look to see what we were doing and seeing where there were gaps in our ministry of reaching the lost and maturing. When we look at the Great Commission in Matthew the 28th chapter, remember in 19 where he says, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, teaching them to observe all things." When we say, what's the Great Commission? The active verb of the Great Commission is making disciples. And then there are three participles to that. And it's going to be going and baptizing and teaching all things whatsoever I've commanded you. And so we make a terrible mistake whenever we think the Great Commission is all about baptizing. You know, it's that deal of, oh, how many did you baptize last year? Oh, we baptized 30 last year. Well, how many of them are still around you? Oh, I don't know. We don't keep up with that number. We just count how many we baptize. That's not the Great Commission. The Great Commission is, are we making disciples? Disciples are those who follow the teacher, Jesus Christ, and his teaching. Their life is a reflection of him, and their mind is continually studying him and his teachings. Are we making disciples? And then the last participle there, that continual teaching is to be continuing. And so now not only are we making disciples, but then we are to be maturing as disciples. Now that's the Great Commission. Making and maturing disciples. And so as we look at this, and you may could easily sit down and figure out tweaks that need to be made on this. And that's why I'm trying to emphasize to you, it's not that this is the perfect plan. It's the question, if you sat down and looked within the life of your congregation and your ministry, how are you doing? How are you doing at making and maturing disciples? Not swelling. Making disciples. All around your church building on Sunday, when you gather there and those that love the Lord and they are disciples and they are maturing disciples, they're there. They're there because they love the Lord. All around that building, from the first few houses out, 10, 15, 20, 30 miles in each direction, there are hundreds, and for most of us, we can say thousands of individuals. They stayed in their house. They're out washing their car. They're mowing their lawn. They're sleeping in. They're on the couch. The question we have to ask ourselves is, what can we do so that those individuals would want to leave their house and come to our house? Come to worship the Lord. Come to learn of the Lord. Come to give their life to the Lord. And to be changed for who they are. The first thing that I'd like for you to observe, it may sound really corny, it's so simple, but the first thing I'd like for you to observe as you look at that house and thinking about how to get them to leave their house is this little rule. People cannot visit a place they do not know exists. If you want someone to leave their house and come to your house, they're going to have to know as a congregation that you exist. It's just that simple. Are you relevant to the community around you? Are you relevant to the individuals that live next door to you? Do the members of your congregation and the places where they work, is there anything about their lives that becomes relevant to the people around them? Listen, Jesus didn't come to this earth and show us the way to live die upon the cross to pay that price, to establish the church so you and I can be saved, so that we'd be irrelevant to the world. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify the Father which is in heaven. I think all of us would believe that men seeing the good works isn't just other Christians. Jesus taught of a life that when people in the world saw it, they saw relevance to that life. Even if they didn't accept it, they saw that there was things happening that were good. And those that did accept it would glorify the Father which is in heaven. Let's make up a scenario that's happening all around our buildings every week. The wife picked up her first grader from elementary school. She's driving back home. And he's just talking away. He drops something in the floor and he curses. And she looks in the rearview mirror. And she says, "Johnny, what did you say?" He says it again. He says, "Johnny, we don't talk like that." He says, "Sure we talk like that." He says, "No, we don't talk like that." She goes home, and that night when it's just her and her husband, she says, "You're not going to believe this. On the way home is what Johnny said." And he says, "Well, I don't know what to do about it." She says, "Well, what do you mean you don't know what to do? We can't raise our kids like this." He says, "Well, what do you expect me to do?" So later on night, they're laying in bed. This conversation picks back up again because mama won't drop it. "Hey, we've got to do something. I'm not raising a kid that talks like that. I'm not going to raise a kid that gets lost in the craziness of the world. Didn't you tell me when you were little that your grandmother took you to church?" "Yeah, but honey, that's been years ago." "But wasn't that a better way to live?" "I suppose it was, but you're the last person on earth I would ever hear bring up the topic of church. You've never set foot in a church building, and you always mock Christians." "Honey, leave it alone. I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about our son. I want something different for him." She says, "Honey, would you go to church with me?" He says, "You're kidding, right?" "No, I'm not kidding. You're serious. You want to go to church?" "Yeah." There's got to be something that we can offer our children. "Okay. I'll go to church with you." "Honey, are you asleep?" "No, I'm not asleep yet." "Are we going Sunday?" "Sure. Sure, we'll go Sunday." "Okay. Honey, are you asleep yet?" "No." "Where are we going Sunday?" Your neighbors in your neighborhood, how are they going to answer that question? They will not visit a church that's irrelevant to them, and they cannot visit a church that they do not know exists. Will your congregation ever come to their mind? Will the next few words be something like, "Well, all I know is that Bill at work, for the last 4 years, he's invited me to some kind of special Friends Day or something. I don't really know what it was, but I know he's a good man and he loves the church where he is. I tell you what, I'll talk to him tomorrow at work and I'll ask him about his church. Maybe that's where we need to go." What are they going to say? And when they do come to your congregation for the first time, will you have the patience to lead someone who knows absolutely nothing about the Lord all the way to the Lord, when that's going to be a pretty lengthy journey? We like things to be quick. We like something to be compact. We like to put it in the microwave and drive it through. You know how people come to the Lord? People come to the Lord one step at a time. Today, upon average, it's 6, and I know this is wide span, I'm just giving you what it says, 6 to 18 months for individuals to visit for the first time before they make a decision about their spiritual life. Are you willing to walk with them during those 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, 8 months, as they are trying to figure out if they're willing to make a life-changing commitment of becoming a Christian? People cannot visit a church they do not know exists. Before we leave this very first one, I want to challenge you with a question. It's not a question that's brilliant. I wish I could say, I thought of this one day. I didn't. But when I read it, it was like, I know for our congregation, we talked about it among our staff. We then talked about it among our eldership. And there was no real smiles and happiness when we talked about this because we realized that we had failed miserably at this. But we asked this simple question. And I'll just put our church name in. If the Mount Juliet Church of Christ ceased to exist today, would anyone in the community notice or care? And we begin to do some things very differently at that point. I'm not talking about changing any doctrine. I'm talking about how we're reaching out to folks. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Second greatest command. The royal law, James would say. Now, if individuals are supposed to do that, how much so should a congregation collectively do that? Does your neighborhood look at you collectively and say, those are good neighbors? That congregation is a blessing to this community. That congregation is constantly loving their neighbor. They're constantly reaching out to other people and serving. They respect them. They love them. They give to them. They serve them. You know those staffs I opened with? Churches are irrelevant. They don't like the church. People in the world are more spiritual than people in the church. Listen, those stats don't come about because we fulfill the royal law. Those stats don't come about because of Matthew the 25th chapter, when they were hungry, we fed them. And when they were thirsty, we gave them drink. And when they were strangers, we took them in. And whenever they were sick, we visited them. Whenever they were in prison, we went unto them. Listen, those stats didn't come about because Christians are doing those things. Those stats come about because we failed. As we evaluate ourselves, maybe you look at yourself and your community and say, I'm thankful to be able to say that's not true with us. All over our community, people know the Lord loves them. People know that this congregation loves them and will serve them. People cannot visit a place they do not know exists, and they will not visit a place that is irrelevant to them. But what do we do when they do visit? When they do visit, we only have one opportunity to make a first impression. So, when we make that first impression, will it be such that if the statistic is true that usually within the first 7 minutes people decide if they're going to visit for the second time, if within those first few minutes or at least that first visit when they're deciding whether or not they'll visit again, will their answer be, yes, I want to visit this place again? Now, let's go ahead and state what seems obvious, and there may be some that it's not so obvious, and might even be some that would disagree with it. But let's go ahead and state, when someone is coming, and I'm not talking about a member of the Church of Christ that's moved from one community to your community and they're going around visiting. I'm not talking about that situation. I'm talking about converting individuals that are in the world. When they visit you for the first time, what is going to bring them back for the second visit? I'll tell you what's going to bring them back. We teach the truth. They don't know the truth. They don't know false doctrine. They don't know the difference. It's not going to be truth that brings them back for the second or the third or probably the fourth visit. What's going to bring them back? Ephesians 4:15 said it, speaking the truth in love. Jesus Christ said it. You remember what He was sandwiched between when He said it? He had just washed the apostles' feet and He was on His way to give Himself upon the cross as so eloquently studied last night. And you remember what He said between those two events? A new commandment that I give unto you, that you love one another as I have loved you. By this may all men know that you are my disciples if you have love one for another. It's going to be the love that we show to individuals that will cause them to say, I want to come back. I like what I see. They're not going to understand completely what they even see. But they know that they see a love that they've never seen out in the world. They know they see a grace and a mercy and a compassion like they've never seen out in the world. And they see lives that don't look like the lives that were out in the world. They want something different and they're seeing it there. And so then we have to stop and really evaluate, what are we doing to greet individuals? What are we doing to make sure that somebody's taking them out to lunch? What are we doing to make sure that somebody's speaking to them in the parking lot? You ever notice how odd it is at churches when you visit a church? Have you ever noticed, like, we have no talk zones to guests, and I hope your church is not like this, but here's the way the majority of churches work. You're out in the parking lot, and you park right beside somebody, get out of the car, they'll act like you're not even there. You know, it's like, hey, hello. And then you get in the foyer, and now that's the visiting zone. Hey, how you doing? Good to see you. Yeah, you visiting? Good to have you today. Great. Then you walk into the auditorium. Again, a no-visit zone. You walk to your seat, and you sit there, and you act like you don't know any guests that's sitting around you. They can be sitting right there. You don't talk to them. Why are we like that? Well, what is it that has grown that kind of environment that says, if we so happen to pass you in the foyer, you're going to be lucky because you're going to think we're a really friendly church. Now, you know, also, statistics prove this, like, big time. This comes out this way every time you read any statistics on it. How do congregations always rate themselves? Always. Friendly. Every time. Now, the real question is, how do guests rate your congregation? That's the real question. When they can't get a hello and even, hey, could I help you find the front door? Could I help you find a Bible class this morning? Hey, would you sit with me in Bible class? We'd love for you to sit with us in worship. Hey, right after worship, we didn't really cook today. We're going to go out to a restaurant. Would you join us? We'd love to take you out to eat today. What are you saying to individuals? F-O-R-M, form. You say, I don't know what to say to individuals. Have them to fill out a mental form, if the mental is in your mind. Form, F-O-R-M. Talk to them about their family. Don't just greet them and walk off. Talk to them about their family. Is this your wife? Is this your children? Is this your grandchildren? Family. Oh, occupation. Almost everybody has or has had an occupation. You retired? Where are you retired from? Or recreation. When someone is not religious, talk to them about things they're comfortable talking with. How are Cowboys doing this season? Let's talk a little bit. I noticed your jersey there. Hey, if you're moving along in the conversation and you feel like the timing's right, you can talk to them about religion. Hey, I think this is the first time I've seen you here. Are you a guest here? Do you have a home church? And then M is message. You always leave them with a message that is an invitation. Could I help you find a Bible class? Could you sit with me in worship today? Will you have lunch with me? Hey, we're having an evening service at 6 o'clock. We'd love for you to come back and join us, sir. Maybe next week. You said you couldn't have lunch today. You want to join us for lunch next week? We'll be glad to make plans. We've got to have that positive experience. Because what we want eventually, I mean, we want it right now, but we've got to be patient. If we want the opportunity to sit down and study with that individual. But they're not going to be ready to do that until they trust you. And so we then brings us to that third thing, and that is we have to build relationships. One study tracked It wasn't a huge study, but it tracked individuals that had been baptized. And at the end of 1 year after their baptism, any of them that did not have more than 7 relationships built, none of them were faithful. It's not us that came up with this idea of relationships. The day the church was established, verse 42 said, and they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and in fellowship. We need each other. I love that saying that said, I was not saved to walk this way alone. The guest that is coming, if they can't get beyond that surface talk in the parking lot, in the foyer, and in a Bible class, and in the auditorium, if they can't get beyond that surface talk in your congregation because the network of your fellowship is all inward and nobody is reaching out to build those relationships, if they can't get those relationships, they're going to go down the road and it'll probably be to a denomination and they're going to keep visiting until they find someone that pulls them into a relationship. And then you know what we too oftentimes say? Well, I guess they didn't want the truth anyway. No. They didn't know the difference in truth and false doctrine and probably to this day still don't, because we never reached out and pulled them into our homes. We never took them to lunch. We never figured out, where are you today that we can help you take another step tomorrow toward the Lord? As we think about this and starting to kind of pull this together a little bit here, as they do visit, there has to be somebody, and hopefully more than one, but it doesn't have to be the whole congregation. James says there not be many teachers. But we have to have somebody that's willing to go up to them, build that relationship, and say, hey, I know you've been visiting for a while. I want you to know something. I'm not here to twist your arm, but I want you to know this. Whenever you're ready to sit down and study, I just want you to know I'd love to do that. You let me know when you're ready. I'm sure that there's starting to be questions churning in your mind about God and about the Scriptures. And I'm sure that maybe the Bible seems like a huge book right now and you may feel kind of lost. If you want to just sit down and study, we'll just start down at the ground level and we'll just kind of work up from there. And you let me know. Somebody's got to take that step. Individuals are not converted to Christ through conversations. I would challenge every preacher, and I was challenged when Polishing the Pulpit was just getting off the ground by a preacher then, and I was in my young 20s, have 3 one-on-one Bible studies every week. Have at least 3 one-on-one Bible studies every week. People need the opportunity to sit down and for you to explain the Scriptures to them where they are at that point in time in their life. Preaching is powerful. Bible classes are wonderful resources. But somebody has to be able to sit down and meet that person where they are much of the time. And so be that person, be that resource that will help bring those people to the point that they will say to you, I want to be baptized. I want to become a Christian. And then, don't take your eyes off of them. Then what can you do to help mature them so that they come all the way back up that model so that now they're the ones saying, how can we get people to leave their house and come with us? And they're the ones saying, let's make sure that we make people feel welcome. Let's make sure that we take them in. And then hopefully, when all is said and done, literally, when all is said and done, what do you want people to say when they pass by your casket? Do you see your life as a mission, and do you have that mission defined? Maybe mine is a little bit too simple. But I have a vision in my mind But one day I'll be laying in a casket. And I just hope that there's a lot of people that walk by and will be able to say, He helped me walk closer with the Lord. He taught me about Jesus Christ. I'm a Christian today because of His influence. Now, that's not about me. That is to increase the population of heaven. If I call my preacher, if I call myself a preacher, and I lay in that casket and say, I was a preacher, that's not enough. It's not enough. What are we doing to change the population of heaven? Amen.